Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Welcome to another exciting edition of The Thought Police with me, Mike Graham, and him,
Kevin O'Sullivan.
So, it's been quite a week, hasn't it? Again, yep. Here we are thinking, every fucking Monday I come into work and I think to myself, might be a bit quieter this week, but it hasn't been.
We've got stories coming at us from all angles, and I think, we're just recording this the night after Iran bombed Israel on a massive scale. We've got
180 missiles.
Freebie Gate continues apace.
Lord Ali's been investigated.
But I think we should talk about the most important story, which of course is Philip Schofield.
The most important story in his world.
This cunt who just says, I don't want to be on television anymore, and I'm going on to television to say that.
Yes.
What a fucking liar.
Mm. Also, did you notice? I haven't watched too much of it, but he's definitely sort of dyed his hair, so it looks something.
He looks weird, doesn't he?
Yeah.
In fact, when I saw the clip, because I was going to watch it, actually, I was going to watch one episode at least, because I knew we'd be probably talking about it at some point or other this week, and I completely forgot that, to put the TV on, because I was watching something, on Amazon. And, I just thought, when I saw the clip, he looks really weird. He looks almost like a head on a stick.
Yes.
It doesn't look like he's got any body.
Yeah. He's got that kind of the...
I mean, he's quite a slight bloke, anyway, isn't he?
He's a skinny guy. But he's got a kind of... it's the designer stubble and the designer hair.
Yes. He's very well groomed for a man in Castaway.
It's the Castaway look via the Paris catwalk, the fashion catwalk. Mm. Anyway, the point is, so he said, I don't know, I've had enough of television, I don't want to... That's a fucking lie. He's desperate to get on television.
If he got offered a sort of an afternoon, daytime show, he would turn it down?
He'd do anything to get back on television. Yeah. And that's what's interesting about his three nights on Channel 5 Castaway on this island.
Yeah.
Is he fucking blew it.
Right.
He might have managed to get himself back on television in the long run, but not now. Because it exposed his personality.
Yeah.
He's a self-obsessed little pity-me prick.
Well, it's not really...
Everything is someone else's fault.
Yeah, and he's not a very nice bloke.
Exactly.
Where does he go from here? I don't care, frankly. Why did he do it? Presumably not for the money, because I'm told he didn't even make very much money out of it.
Well, I'm told that we better not go into numbers, but put it this way, he made less for 10 days on a desert island filming on his own than he used to make for one episode of This Morning.
Right.
So he did it for peanuts,
right.
And trust me, that guy, he saw this as the beginning of his road back to television.
Right.
But he exposed himself as somebody who didn't seem to see that he's done anything wrong.
Yeah.
These guys
never do. Hugh Edwards is the same.
Yeah, you're right.
I know that people say, you shouldn't compare the two. Well, I compare the two because they were both big names on TV.
And they groomed young men.
They groomed young men. Now, in Hugh Edwards' case, he was a paedophile. And so obviously that's a lot more serious than anything that Philip Schofield did. But essentially... if you look at the two characters that they are, they're not that different.
Phil said, it's very important for legal reasons that we must point out that Philip Schofield is not a paedophile. But when it comes to his brother, that's a kind of a different story.
Well, his brother is, in fact,
his fucking brother's inside paedophile. For serious paedophilia.
Yeah, right.
And a lot of his problems revolve around that. But mainly, it was misbehaving at work.
Mm.
It was grooming a vulnerable young bloke at work who he knew since he was 12 years old. And then, so they had this sort of affair, and he fucking, dazzled him by taking him to the West End limos, flash apartments, hotels, all this.
Well, then did he not keep him in an apartment up by Shepherd's Bush?
Well, yeah. Well, no, he had an apartment where they would go all the time. But by the studios, and I think he stayed there a lot.
Right.
But the thing is that Phil, at a certain point, said, "I'm a bit bored with this guy, this kid." I say kid; he was
in his 20s.
Yeah,
by this
early
point,
20s.
Right?
Yeah, and he just dropped him like a stone. And the kid was fucking heartbroken.
And did he not then take up with somebody else who also was not unadjacent to the working scenario.
Well, what happened with this guy was that the guy went apeshit and sort of contacted the papers.
Right.
This is what Philip Schofield's done to me.
Mm.
And that set in motion a kind of chain of events that exposed what Philip Schofield had been up to with this guy. And, you know, he had to leave. And now he's trying to pretend, you know, he quit. He quit before he was kicked.
Right.
You know, he went before he jumped.
So presumably he thinks he was terribly bad.
Well, he thinks he's...
And was kind of, you know, the victim of the entire scenario, right?
Well, he said on this programme, Castaway, they sacked me because my brother's a paedophile. That's not fucking true.
No.
It's not fucking true. I mean...
Probably didn't help.
Look, if you were the boss of a big star like Philip Schofield at ITV and you found out that his brother is a convicted paedophile, and by the way, we can't say the details, but the details are fucking horrifying of what his brother got up to. You would be very worried. But you can't sack someone for what their brother did.
No.
It's the end of.
I think the point is that the trust presumably had broken down because ITV, when they were asked the question about Philip Schofield and what they knew he was doing, they say, well, we kept asking him and he kept denying that there was any truth to the story about him and this young runner. And of course, I think that they're being probably slightly, shall we say, delicate with the truth, if not economical, because surely if it works, I mean, we've had these conversations before about Hugh Edwards again, you know, in work situations, particularly in the kind of jobs that we do in this kind of business, you know, you're with people a lot and you know what's going on in their lives by and large, don't you?
Yeah,
especially if it's happening in front of your fucking eyes.
But I think with Schofield, what's emerged, what people have learnt about him during his 3 days on Hellhole Island, is he's a guy who lies easily.
Yes.
He just lies. Mm. And the investigation into his behaviour this morning at ITV, which was conducted by external barristers, they found that he had lied repeatedly about this relationship. And hence his downfall. He's a fucking liar.
Well, that would be why they fired him, right? Not necessarily even because of the relationship.
Lie.
Because you can't employ somebody at that kind of level if there's no trust.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, it may be that even if he'd admitted his affair, they might have said, well, Phil, this makes things difficult. But it would have been a lot better than fucking denying it, which was what he did time and time again. So,
Do you think it's credible, though, for ITV to say they didn't know? Because, I mean, you've read stories, as I have, about how, you know, when they'd go to National Television Awards night, they'd all get on a boat and they'd all go down the river to the O2 where it was being held, various other functions that they went to. And the runner, the boyfriend, if you like, was on the boat. And the only other people on the boat were the talent, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't as if the entire production team went, but suddenly this guy was always there.
They knew about this close friendship. He denied there was anything sexual or inappropriate about it. So what they didn't want it to be true. They didn't want Philip Schofield to be in trouble because they saw him as their big star, the mainstay of this morning and all that.
Mm.
But they had to go through the motions and they asked him time and time again, are you having an affair with this guy? No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
Right.
No, I'm not. And that essentially is why he got fired, lying through his fucking teeth.
Yeah.
And he's gone onto this island and he's still lying through his teeth. And he's clearly a self-obsessed little shit who turns around and says, yeah, I know what I did was wrong, you know, grooming.
Ish.
I know it was wrong. It wasn't illegal. It was unwise. But is that enough to destroy a man for? Yeah, it fucking is, Phil. It is.
Well, if you also, it's a bit like when we talk about Keir Starmer and the hypocrisy of the Labour Party and the government taking all these freebies when they said they were going to be different and they said they were going to be transparent and all the things that they're not doing. If he, as he did, paints himself as this kind of, you know, lovely kind of homey kind of guy, the sort of person you'd love to have at your dinner table, you could introduce to your mother, such a lovely bloke, you know, that was all a sham, clearly.
Yeah.
He's not like that.
No.
He's not a very nice guy.
No, I don't think he is. I mean, he was good at playing the housewife's favourite.
Oh, sure. And I mean, people will tell you, I suppose, you'll know more than me about this. You're a fucking TV writer. You know, he was good at his job, wasn't he?
Oh, he was a good...
I could never stand watching him, but I mean, I get that he being good at his job.
You weren't the target audience.
No, I suppose not. I suppose not. I was never on the bloody show either.
He was good at his job.
He used to go on ITV breakfast show quite a lot. Yeah, did you ever go on this morning?
I've been on this morning a few times.
With him?
Yeah, I knew Philip. Yeah. I knew him not well, but I knew him all right.
And what was he like to...
I used to bump into him around town. He was always really nice. You know, we just having chat and how's things and all that.
Right.
Because he was very good at playing the showbiz game.
Yeah.
You know... People like me, journalists, particularly TV critics, you never meet a star that doesn't love you.
Yes.
Because they want you to write nice things about them. So he was always very nice to me. But I think what we're talking about with Philip Schofield, this is a story of our times.
Yeah.
He's a guy who grew up on telly.
Mm.
He's been on telly since he was about 20 years old.
Yeah, right.
And he can't really, exist... Yeah, it goes way back, Gordon the Gopher and all that. It goes, he can't exist without a camera. And when he says, I don't want to be on TV anymore, that is another lie. He's desperate to be on TV. But I think he's revealed himself to be a self-obsessed, lying little prick who doesn't seem to have any concept of the depth of his crime. And people haven't liked him.
And also he used it as an opportunity, did he not? From what I've read, to have a go at all the people that he sees as, you know, his enemies, the people who put him in this terrible position. He put himself in the terrible position. Nobody else did.
Yeah.
But he's proven himself to be a bit sort of petty and jealous and kind of bitter.
And the
because he had a go at Holly Willoughby. He sort of took the piss out of her. She's obviously, you know, distanced herself from him. And presumably they're not friends anymore. And that's the trouble with that sort of
really
fake...
No, she's fucking
but that's the trouble with the fake world of showbiz, isn't it? Because, you know, somebody said the other day, but they're journalists. Well, they're not really, are they?
Yeah.
The fact is, they're showbiz personalities. They used to go on holiday together. I don't imagine that was much fun for either of them, really.
Well, I think
they're a bit shallow, isn't
it? I mean, it was one of those rare cases of TV presenters who work together actually spending some time together off-screen.
Right.
You know... Go way back in time. You know, Morecambe and Wise never spent any time together socially. All the great double acts don't. Laurel and Hardy didn't spend time together.
Right.
But they, Schofield and Holly did. But you know, we know the story that Holly found out that Phil's brother. Or that Phil...
Who also used to go on holiday with them, apparently.
She felt that Phil knew that his brother was a paedophile and that Phil had allowed his brother to spend time around her kids.
Right.
And she was fucking...
Because
furious.
She would... Because he would also go on holidays.
Yeah, yeah. Right? She was furious about that.
Quite rightly, I suppose.
So what's happened with all this is he's tried to sort of dig himself out of the... a hole with this show Castaway.
Mm.
And what he's actually done is fucking dug himself so deep he'll never get out. He's fucked.
Yeah, because he won't get anything else now, will he?
As they said, this is the worst television mistake since Prince Andrew on Newsnight.
Fucking hell, that bad, eh?
Talking about mistakes, should we talk about Mr. Starmer?
Yeah,
or sorry, Sir Keir.
Sir Keir Starmer, yes. We speak to you as it's just been announced that the House of Lords Standards Committee is going to investigate Lord Alley. Because they're not sure that he's been entirely honest about some of the things that he's been up to, i.e. Some of the, either I'm not sure if it's for monies that he's given away or monies that he's received or things to do with one of his companies. You know, it's all a bit murky at the moment, but we'll find out.
I think it probably revolves around interests.
Yes.
You know, he's taken part in a debate and hasn't declared an interest.
Right.
It's the sort of thing he'll get a slap on the wrist for, but... What I think, you know, I know Wahid Ali, and he's moved without trace for the last...
He must be hating this.
He doesn't like publicity. So for the last 30 years or so, he's been a mover and shaker in the background, quietly operating with no one
knowing. Well, how surprising was it?
But now he's in the fucking limelight and they're gunning for him.
Yeah, they are. And quite rightly, in my view, because he hasn't been transparent and he hasn't declared an awful lot of the stuff that he's done. And it's having to come out into the dribs and drabs. I mean, Keir Starmer's got, you know, lips tighter than a bloody drum. You have to literally kind of shoehorn any information out of him. Excuse me. But the problem for me as well is that basically he went to Syria at the behest, apparently, of Tony Blair to go and talk to Assad twice. And this was all during the time.
He was also going there when Cameron was Why did
This was all happening at the time when Britain was looking into Syria and whether it should be bombed, whether it should be attacked, whether Assad should be removed.
Assad was gassing his people, wasn't it?
Right. And as far as we understand it, Ali's advice led to a decision being made not to remove
to leave Assad alone.
Now, I don't really know the ins and outs of Syrian politics, but I know that the President Assad is a pretty unsavoury character.
Yeah.
And if Lord Ali has gone to Syria and then come back to Britain to kind of lobby on his behalf, I'd like to know why.
Well, yeah, I agree with you there, because, you know, as I say, I've known him. He's a kind of, he's a friend of mine, but I've always said, and to a large extent, I think I'm right, he's not the kind of guy, this wasn't about getting advantages for his businesses and all that. He just loves you know, when people make a lot of money, the next thing they want to do is have power.
Right.
So he wanted to be a power broker. However, that said, I don't understand why I had numerous meetings with Assad.
Right.
Why?
Exactly.
Why?
And to do what, exactly?
Yeah, but...
what purpose?
Well, the upshot was, he lobbied very hard, as you say, Mike, not to remove Assad, to leave Assad in position.
Right.
Now, there's an argument for that, even though Assad's obviously a great cunt.
Yeah.
But you leave him in position because if you depose him, it destabilises the region and the whole mosaic starts to fall apart. I can see that.
Yeah.
But I can't see why someone like Wahid Ali would make that a cause célèbre.
Well, also,
so I want to know why.
Forgive me for saying this, but I mean, he comes from a kind of showbizzy TV background, right? He's not a politician by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, he's a businessman, sure. But I mean, I don't think most people in this country would be particularly comfortable with, you know, very wealthy men, businessmen, going off and doing government's bidding for them. I don't really get that. I know he's in the House of Lords and people go, oh, well, he's a Labour Party member, has been for a long time. Well, sorry, that doesn't mean that anybody who's in the Labour Party can go and start hobnobbing with fucking world leaders and decide to kind of make decisions or influence decisions, on foreign policy from Britain.
I agree with you. I mean, what I want to know, and I just don't know, is why, just fucking why, he took it upon himself to see Assad so many times.
Right.
That it can't just be that in his fucking £18 million penthouse flat in Covent Garden, he's thinking, I'm really worried about stability in the Middle East.
Yeah.
I'll go and see Assad. Fuck off. I want to know why he did that.
Yes, and that's the question that everybody wants to know, and that's why the question of what he got in return for all of this money he's given to the Labour Party, exactly what his role has been inside of Downing Street, all of this is very important, and still, we're not told anything.
No.
You know, we had old Pat McFiddling, as we call him now, Pat McFadden, basically, who was put out on Sunday to kind of defend the Labour Party, to defend Keir Starmer, who didn't want to speak and who wasn't seen for several days. And he just said, look, you know, we've decided to change the rules and we're no longer going to accept any free clothes. Well, sorry, that's no longer the issue. That's just part of the story. The issue is what is Lord Ali doing in meetings with government officials and with government cabinet ministers? What's he doing? And why is he there?
Yeah.
That's a perfectly reasonable question, but they haven't answered it.
Yeah, and also Starmer, you know, there's that thing, the Alistair Campbell 11-day test.
Yes.
That if a story, Alistair Campbell, when he was Tony Blair's PR, his communications chief, always used to say, don't worry about a story.
Yeah.
As long as it fades from the front page before 11
yeah.
days.
Well, it's going to be 111 days soon.
Yeah, exactly. If your story is still making the front page after 11 days, Alistair Campbell, who for all his problems knew his business, said you're in the shit.
Yeah.
You're in the shit. And this fucking
and
story...
And he had to go for that very reason.
Yeah, Freebiegate is going on and on and on. It's way past the 11
And the reason why it's still going on is because they haven't told the truth. Mm-hmm. And every single sort of, you know, story that comes out has only come out because somebody's spotted something or somebody's asked a question. You know, let's not forget, you know, everyone says, oh, but the only reason everybody knows about this stuff is because Keir Starmer's new Labour Party is registering everything and being transparent. Except they're not, because all of the amounts that they're putting down for, say, for example, the clothing, for the tickets, they're all way under estimates,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the accommodation thing is more and more murky. We've now got about three different reasons why the penthouse was being used, either by Keir Starmer's son for his GCSEs, or it was used for party matters and fundraisers.
Yeah.
Then it was used for the election night. You know, they're all over the place with all these different excuses, and none of them ring true.
No, exactly right. And, Keir Starmer, we should fucking put him on the rack about it. You know, you said you moved into this £18 million apartment in Covent Garden so that your kid, your 16-year-old boy, could study.
But then he said, but I never spent the night there.
Worse than that, they were there, the family was there for a month after the last after the last GCSE was taken.
Right.
So, what were you doing there for that fucking month? It wasn't so your kid could revise, because all the GCSEs were over.
But this is part of the problem, that he doesn't allow himself to be questioned like that. Mm. You know, he made his first press conference in a week last night when he came out in favour, surprisingly enough, of Israel.
Took his time, by the way. Took his time.
Yeah, we actually said that we were going to stand shoulder to shoulder with Israel. Well, you're not actually, because as people have pointed out today, you know, the Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, is actually, 3 weeks ago, pulled the funding and licences so that weapons could be sent that they could defend themselves, and now they've been attacked by Iran. Well, surely they should restore that immediately, shouldn't they? Second of all, he then said, right, I'm going to take some questions. He took two questions and then scurried off. Neither one of them was about Wardrobe Gate, obviously, or the donations.
Well, I was on air last night when all this was happening.
Yeah.
Right? Now, even Sleepy Joe Biden was fast out of the traps.
Yeah.
As soon as this raid happened, this missile attack by Iran,
right.
Biden, to his credit, instantly said America stands four square behind Israel's right to defend itself.
Yes.
So then the countdown was on for when would Britain's Prime Minister say something.
Yes.
So I'm on air. It's fucking an hour and a half.
Mm.
What the fuck are they doing? I know what they're fucking doing. They're sitting around saying, what kind of announcement can we make that won't upset the Muslim vote?
Yes.
They don't want to upset their mates in the Muslim community because Starmer is relying on their votes at the next election. In the end, I reckon his lawyers said, sorry, Keir, there's no fucking way out of this. You've got to back Israel to the hilt. And in fairness, eventually he did. But I thought the delay was pretty fucking scandalous.
But also, given that there is still this embargo on 30 licenses, it rings very hollow.
Yeah.
Because it was only, 2 weeks ago, I think, that Netanyahu was deriding the fact that Labour had dealt Israel a terrible blow, terribly disloyal, supposedly Britain's biggest ally in the Middle East, and they basically treat them like shit. And it's all very well saying we stand full square behind you, but they don't, because if they did, they'd be selling them more weapons.
We should restore all of our weapons sales to Israel, but of course, don't forget, technically it doesn't make any fucking difference because we're only selling about 1%.
No, it doesn't. Fact is, it was a very symbolic point of principle. David Lammy knew what he was doing. He knew it wouldn't really have a massive effect on Israel's ability to fight anyone, but he also knew that he was putting a marker down and basically saying, look, we know better than you. We think you might be in breach of international law. It wasn't even, we think you are in breach. It was like, we think you might be in the future. It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, and talking of utter motherfuckers, that arsehole from the United Nations, Antonio Guterres. That's an absolute disgrace.
What's the point of the United Nations?
He did not condemn Iran.
No, of course not.
He said, I condemn this escalation of the conflict in the Middle East as I condemn all escalations. Fucking outrage.
Fucking
by the way, Israel said, right, you're banned. You're not coming to this. You're not allowed. So Israel, the General Secretary, the Secretary General of the United Nations is not allowed into Israel.
Yeah.
That's a fucking ridiculous situation.
Well, the whole organisation, UN, should be disbanded. It's completely, utterly fucking pointless.
Waste of time, isn't it?
And a waste of money. We all give them a massive amount of money. And you'll remember this from your time in America. And they all live very high in the hole in New York. They all have great apartments. None of them pay any bills. They don't have any problem. If they get a parking ticket, don't have to pay it.
Yeah,
if you get a speeding ticket, don't have to pay it. In fact, when I was living there, and I know this is a long time ago, there was a couple of rapists. There was a couple of, fucking drug dealers. And they were never prosecuted because they're diplomatic immunity.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that they represented some fucking godforsaken country in the United Nations.
Well, you know that Guterres is a fucking massive moron. in Portugal, he's like he's worse than Corbyn.
Yeah,
he's like Corbyn.
Right.
So all you get from him is this.
Oh, Keir Starmer's old mate.
Yeah. Guterres is mates with Corbyn. You'd be surprised to hear. And before October the 7th, apparently, on average, this is like last year. Apparently, on average, the United Nations condemned Israel about 12 times a week. Fucking bullshit.
I know. Absolutely ridiculous. I mean, this is the thing. Nobody can seemingly look at the Middle East. I mean, thankfully, nobody with any sense actually stood up and tried to defend Hezbollah. But there were people marching in New York, right, saying it was a terrible shame that fucking scumbag Nasrallah, who caused all of the problems in Beirut and who had basically bankrupted Lebanon years and years ago at the behest of his fucking evil puppet masters in Iran. You know, they were actually marching against the fact that he'd been killed, saying how terrible it was.
Well, Hezbollah, you know, by the way, the lefty narrative about the Middle East, right, is this. I was with some lefties at the weekend, and they said, I'll tell you one thing, Kirby, your fucking heroes, Israel, they won't be going into Lebanon. They know that the Hezbollah's military power in the Lebanon is awesome.
Yeah.
And I said, I haven't seen much sign of it, have we? They're fucked.
Yeah.
They're fucked. Israel has blown up all their fucking missile launchers. They've still got a few left, but they've seriously diminished their military ability. And more to the point, they've not only killed Nasrallah, they killed six more Hezbollah leaders. So you're getting nothing out of Hezbollah. Well, they're fucked.
Do you know what? I read a great comment from somebody. I can't remember who it was. I wish I could remember because it was brilliant. It said, just remember this. The guy who's now running Hezbollah wasn't important enough 2 weeks ago to have a fucking pager.
By the way, that is very true.
That is a really interesting line about the pager.
That was incredible, wasn't it?
Explosions. And I tried to engage that great guy that we have on often on talk, Colonel Simon Diggins.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really interesting.
Knows his stuff.
Really good military analyst, very good on the Middle East, but very high-minded. And I tried to engage him on the truth about those pager attacks, that it was very sort of Arab.
Yeah.
Because they wear their fucking pagers on their belts. And what those explosions did is they blew a load of guys' bollocks off.
Yeah.
As simple as that. And he wouldn't. He said, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
Well, I am.
Right.
I am. They all got their fucking balls blown off.
Yeah.
But the other thing about... So the other lefty narrative is this. Netanyahu is very unpopular in Israel. Well, after the last three weeks, his fucking poll rating is soaring. They love him.
Well, there's been a couple of videos, I don't know if you've seen them, which I'm sure they would make anyway, but I mean, since the pager and the walkie-talkie episodes of him sort of walking through the airport with his bodyguards and with music behind him and people like high-fiving him and people shaking his hand, you know, so, you know, a lot of those people who are demonstrating against him, I'm told this by people in Israel, are very much the sort of lefty, you know, we all hate him because he's like Trump or he's like Hitler or, you know, he's really right wing, you know, these kind of self-loathing Jews, you know, who don't think Israel should be doing anything of their own, defence.
His popularity is soaring.
He's like the world's policeman now.
Yeah, because...
I mean, he's doing it all.
So they're going to attack Iran. They're obviously going to go...
They will.
They'll go for their oil, but they may well go for their nuclear.
I think they might just take out fucking supreme leader.
So you get all these fucking arseholes like Starmer and Biden and Guterres.
Yeah.
Ceasefire. Yeah. And it's hilarious the way that Netanyahu goes, swivel on that, off. I'm not.
Well, that was the last thing Guterres said to him, wasn't it? He came to the UN and all those wankers walked out of the chamber before he spoke, right? And then they all went, should we have a ceasefire? And he went, no, see, I'm going.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going back to Israel.
But I mean, you know, obviously, a full-scale war in the Middle East. If you think about it, I mean, and obviously no one wants that, and the ceasefire would be, I guess, lovely. But if you think about it, mate, I mean, these tensions in that entire region, Israel, Lebanon, Iran, Gaza, and so on and so forth,
they've got to come to a head. They've got to come to a head, because if they came to some sort of peace deal now, you know that in 10 years' time it'll happen again.
But
so maybe this is it.
I think so, and I think finally Israel might be able to lose, you know, get the sort of the trappings of democracy away from them and just get right stuck into these fuckers. Because you can't make a peace deal with organisations or countries that want to see you eliminated from the face of the earth.
Fucking Israelis, they're no shit people, are they?
They really don't. They do not fuck around. I mean, we always said it, Mossad, probably the best intelligence operation in the entire world, you know. You fuck with Mossad. Have you seen that movie, Munich? Which was a great film made many years ago.
About 71.
How they went back after the Palestinian... Because let's not forget, this has been going on for a long time. You know, people are too young to remember the Munich Olympic Games in 1972. But basically, you know, armed fucking gangs of fucking Palestinian terrorists took a load of Israeli athletes hostage.
Yeah.
A load of them were killed. Yeah. It was a fucking horrific situation. Yeah. But Mossad went and took the next 5 or 6 years and just went and got every single fucking one of them, shot them in the head.
And don't forget, brilliant. At that stage, they were already in the process of wiping out a lot of Nazis.
Yeah.
Anybody who's fucked with the Jews, Mossad gets.
Right.
They get them. And by the way, you know, on our programmes and that, you have these fucking generals and colonels and these military guys who come on to talk to us, and you look at them and you think, fucking hell, this guy is a fucking hard man. They really are.
They're not fucking around. Amazing. Right, well, we've come to the end, I think, unless there's anything you want to add.
Fulham stormed it at the weekend, 1-0. We beat... who the fuck did we beat? It was Notts Forest.
Okay.
After our storming 3-1.
They don't like you calling them that.
Storming 3-1. Yeah, Notts Forest. Fuck you. Notts Forest. And we beat Newcastle 3-1 the week before. Guess where we are in the fucking league? We're sixth.
Really?
We're sixth. That's
pretty good.
Hey! And on that bombshell, you're going to go fuck yourself.
I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, will Keir Starmer ever go to another football match again? Because he won't want to be seen anywhere, will he?
I think, just to sort of go back to what we were saying to end in just a second, we were just talking this with Julie Hartley-Brewer. I think Starmer has to do something.
Yeah.
He's got to draw a line on it. And the only way I can see is to just announce, well, we won't take any more freebies at all.
Yes.
Never mind clothes.
But that again,
everything.
But it's already too late for that, because he's already made one concession, and if he makes another one, it will appear that the first one wasn't good enough.
Well, it wasn't.
And he's obviously a very arrogant man who doesn't like to be proved wrong. He doesn't think he's got any right to have to answer to anyone. He clearly thinks that he's above the law. He clearly thinks that, you know, because let's not forget, we know he's been doing this since 2019. He might have even been doing it before that. And we also know that he is the biggest recipient of freebies in the entire House of Commons.
By a mile.
By a fucking long
way. The fucking guy is a massive, great scrounger.
Yeah, it's incredible. And
somebody wrote a piece the other day.
Sakir Scrounger, his name should be.
Somebody wrote a piece about him the other day, saying that his problem is that he has absolutely zero emotional intelligence.
Yes.
He can't see that he's done any wrong. Mm. He can't understand when other people have done anything wrong. He's just a bit of a fucking emotional moron.
Yes. Well, he's a husk. I don't think he's got any emotion.
You're right. And I think, politically, I think he's autistic. He just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Doesn't understand criticism. Doesn't confront it properly.
No.
And hence, he finds himself in a fucking great world of shit. And I hope it gets worse and worse and fucking worse.
Well, I think it will. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Watch this space.
Yeah, indeed.
Anyway, otherwise, we'll see you next week.
All right, guys. Fuck off.
Yeah, fucking bollocks.